spotted Bigfoot, and this isn't the first time. The legend continues.
This thing was approximately 3.5-4 feet wide, 6-7 foot tall.
Tree we found, several tracks, real large, way larger than a human.
I looked off towards the woods, and I saw these two long legs moving at the edge of the timber.
It is a mixture of ape and human characteristics.
8 to 10 foot, hairy man-looking person.
It walked with a glide, and then it reached an arm out and kind of touched the tree as it walked by.
Here, one was in the presence of something great unknown.
Never in my life time did I ever think that I was going to run into something like that.
We need something more. The accounts of eyewitnesses today.
You've heard the legends. Now, hear the real stories firsthand. It's Bigfoot, the podcast.
Hello, this is Gwen, your host of Bigfoot, the podcast. I'm here with Ben Willis, my co-host. And how you doing, Ben?
I am so stoked to be back once again.
I know.
Because last time was so fun just talking about your story.
Right.
And this time we have a guest.
We do. This is our very first guest ever. My special guest, my friend, my brother in Bigfoot, Sean Forker. How you doing, Sean?
Well, I'm great, Gwen. Thanks for having me. First guest. I'm excited.
You are. You are the first official guest of Bigfoot the podcast. Aren't you excited?
What a thrill. I am. You know, it's hard to get over excitement out of me. I've been in this field a long time.
Yes. So. Yes, you have. You've been in. How many years have you been researching?
This is 29 years this year.
Almost 30 years of this. Yes. That's amazing.
Yeah. I have learned a lot from Sean over the last few years that I've known him. I consider meeting him and learning his story and being able to research with him is truly a godsend. He's been a wealth of knowledge. His experiences are absolutely incredible. And the reason that I wanted you to come on today, Sean, is because you have a specific experience that I know I have said to people, you should hear Sean Forker's experience. I don't really want to give too much of it away because it's your story and I want you to tell it.
Let Sean tell it. Come on, Sean. Tell us your story.
Yeah. The one story that you were telling me about with the glow stick, I found absolutely
right
insane. Could you share that story with us?
Right. Well, I think it's important for everybody to know that these experiences have happened over the course of the 29 years I've been researching.
Right.
So they just didn't happen once after another in concession. You know, they've just have happened over time. I have a handful of experiences that have happened in that time. And when someone tells you, you have a lot of experiences in a short amount of time, it throws up red flags. So I like to tell people that right off the bat.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I mean, what made this situation unique, Gwen and Ben, is that when we were out, and I say we, I mean Ray Hendershot, my brother Ray, who you also know, Gwen.
I do.
And Dustin Kinley, my research partner still to this day. We've been going out to this area of Pennsylvania, which we'll leave unnamed just because it's still an active research zone. It's in kind of the northern west part of the state. And we had been researching this area for the better part of a year. At the beginning of 2012, it started on New Year's Eve with a double witness sighting. Two sets of witnesses saw what we believed to be the same creature within 45 minutes of each other on the same road, both describing similar features, which made it hard for me to dispel as drinking or anything else that you could explain that often.
A little something, something, yeah.
right, Ben. And you get reports at that time, it makes it suspect, right? Like, oh, it's New Year's Eve, people are drinking, it's not Bigfoot, it's the imbibing that's going on.
Absolutely.
But this proved to be anything. The witnesses didn't know each other. We had brought them together a little while later, and you could tell that was a genuine first-time meeting. And it got the ball rolling for us to investigate this part of PA, which, by the way, had been active previous to that. So it's not like we just picked an area on a map and decided we're going to go cold calling in that particular area. This is an area that have had activity. What we didn't think to expect, because we're more skeptical than we were believer, is that we would get something to happen to us. And what happened to us caught us completely unprepared. Later in that year, in September, the end of September, we had been conducting kind of reconnaissance out to that area. We were out there 2 weeks prior to the night of our event. Had a little bit of sound activity, but nothing concrete. But it gave us more credence that we picked the right area. And so six of us. I forgot Eric Altman, my mentor. Shame on me. He's going to be mad. We had decided to have kind of a small group outing in that location. Now, our first indication that this place was no bueno was we went to get a permit to camp there, which you should in Pennsylvania. That's an important note. They couldn't find the area we were talking about to issue us a permit.
Oh, wow.
What?
We had to show them on the map.
Does this place even exist? What? Some right. Shangri-La here.
So we had to show them on a map where this place existed so we'd get the permit. They gave us the permit, went out, and started our business out that weekend. So we just started setting up some cameras, kind of getting camp built up, because our plan was to get set up in the afternoon or the evening, kind of get an early night so we could get up really early the next morning and get ready to deploy and do some serious investigating. So throughout the evening, we're setting up, nothing going on. Eric, Dave, and Ryan, the other gentleman that with us, decided they were going to go out for the night. They weren't coming back till the next day, so it was just going to be the three of us camping out there that night. They had got everything set up preliminary for us, and they went off. Well, at about maybe 9:45, we're sitting around this little campfire we built, kind of in a triad with Ray's back to the woods, Dustin sitting on the other side of the fire, seeing into the woods, and my back is kind of to the entryway of the campsite. I can see the woods through my peripheral, but I can see Dustin plain on, line of sight. And as we're just sitting there shooting the breeze, I see something move incredibly quick through the peripheral, and I immediately jumped up. I saw Dustin jump up, and he and I run off to the edge of the forest to see what in the heck it was that just, you know, ran through our campsite. Ray had missed it, and as you're going to find out as I go through this story, Ray missed everything. It's silly, like, for how much Ray missed, and I feel bad for him because it was really a interesting encounter. But Dustin and I are talking. We can hear this thing still taking off, and what we had observed was about a 6 to 7 foot tall, very lightly colored, almost a beige colored figure ran through the campsite into the woods. We could hear it taking off through the woods. Lost visibility because as the wood gets darker, you can't see as far.
Right.
But this thing was built like an NBA player. It wasn't that big, stocky, Patterson-Gimlin film creature, you know, the famous Bigfoot footage. It wasn't built like that at all. And it moved so fast and fluidly, like it was built for that environment.
So lanky.
So we're kind of, lanky's a good term. And, you know, after all these years, I wonder maybe if we got a juvenile or maybe something that wasn't well.
But the
more we've talked to folks, there have been other similar sightings of that similar build. So maybe it wasn't that anomalous after all. But as we are sitting there talking, realizing we have a big day ahead of us, we decided to kind of just calm down and settle in for the night, which was really hard because we're amped up.
Yeah.
And we put the fire out, take the logs off the fire, go into the tent, call it a night. Well, we thought it was going to be the night. We're sitting there in the tent. laying down, we can hear something start walking through the campsite. Now, there's a big distinct difference between something walking bipedally and something walking on four legs like a deer and what have you. There's a difference. Yes. You can tell.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And as we're lying here, we can hear this kind of circling from behind a tent, you know, walking around, and I see the little light pop on Dustin's cell phone. Now, keep in mind, cell phone service is not great. The only place you get it is in the center of this meadow that we were camping in. And so he was just really using it to identify the time, and I caught that as an indicator that, okay, Dustin's hearing something, let's talk. So we're just laying there listening to this thing move. Dustin's like, I'm going to get out and take a look at what's going on. Well, as we're lying there talking, we start seeing this faint orange glow on the outside of our tent. So Dustin hurries up, unzips the tent, jumps out there. And I'm starting to put my boots on. And as I can see, something had put the logs back on the fire. And the fire was rekindling and building itself back up. So I go to get out of the tent, and Dustin yells, Forker, throw me my gun. And, you know, not thinking about gun safety at all. I'm sure he's gone. And as I go to get out of the tent, he yells, Forker, look, points off in the direction off to my right, and that same figure we saw earlier is running up this little hillside, and you can hear it just take off, running around the corners of the perimeter of the campsite. We're ramped up. I'm freaked out now, because now this thing has come back. It's revisited us, and I don't know what to make of this. It's not very common in Bigfoot lore to kind of experience this. Well, as we find out later, that's not entirely true. Ray comes out of the tent, wonder what's going on. We explain what's going on. He's kind of upset because he slept through that. Isn't hearing anything that we're hearing. I ran to the center of the campsite and called Dave's wife. Listen, we're getting some activity going on out here. Is Dave nearby? Can you send him back? Because we're kind of creeped out. We're three guys. We're younger men back then, by the way. We're not the battle-tested veterans we are now. And we're out here in the middle of nowhere with something that's come back to see us. And we can kind of hear this thing still moseying around. And it gets quiet. And we're sitting there waiting around. About 45 minutes to an hour later, we see these two lights coming down the trail into the campsite. It's Dave and Ryan. So we start explaining what's going on. Dave is a heck of a salesman. He's building this up to us. This is what we're out here for, guys. You know, this is great. Yeah, well, you stay here. That's was our. But he built us up, and we came up with a plan. We were going to get back in the tent. They were going to kind of bivouac out in the bush, kind of hide themselves, observe the tent, and see if anything was going to come back. So they were out there a while longer, and nothing happened. He radios into us, hey, guys, we think it's fine. Nothing's come back yet. We're going to take off. You guys got this. We'll be back in the morning. All right. Well, you've built our confidence. We're going to stay here and persevere through the night. Well, they leave. Things are quiet. And then here it comes again. Same thing. Bipedal footprints coming through the campsite. Well, we had enough. We jumped out. We scare this thing. It runs off into the woods. And just trying to see what's out there. Because we see what from what behind a tree is something kind of peering back and forth between us. You can see just a faint of it through the moonlight. And we're yelling at it to this point. Hey, if you're someone out here messing with us, this is really stupid. We're armed. We can shoot you. I'm begging Dustin to shoot this thing, and he won't shoot it. because he can't identify. He doesn't military train, smart guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've already thrown a gun once. it's not responding to us. So somebody got the idea, I think it was Dustin, to take a glow stick and throw a glow stick out in the woods.
Hmm.
Throws the glow stick, hits the ground, watching, and boom, something picks it up, walks with it. We yell, hey, and it throws the glow stick down the ground. Well, that really freaked us out. Now, keep in mind, on the lower side of that campsite, it kind of plateaus, so it drops off about 3-4 feet, and then it's level again. And this thing was probably at arm's height at that 4-foot mark at the ground. And so you're dealing with something with height, right? Because now you estimate another 3 to 4 feet above that is its full height.
Right. So you're talking 7, 7.5 feet.
Right. Six to 7.5 feet, right? Height frame on that would be acceptable. But this thing wouldn't go away. And then we just felt just not like it was going to hurt us, but we just kind of felt uncomfortable, like we were being stalked, like there's some danger here. We don't know what it is, but we're definitely not feeling good. But I don't recall feeling like this thing was ever going to kill us, right? Like there's that level of threat. We felt threatened, but it wasn't like imminent danger, because it just really toyed with us. And at some point, we just decided, you know what, let's bluff charge this thing. And so we all got together and we ran at it, and that thing took off like a bat out of hell. And that was the last we heard of it that night. We're back in the tent, laying there talking about what's going on. And at one point, Ray discloses that he felt that something touched him through the tent at one point while he was sleeping through that interaction that we had.
I don't know that I would be sleeping the rest of the night.
How would you lay still and knowing what?
Well, second of all, I'm like, Ray, why in the heck you didn't tell us sooner?
Right.
Like, this is something you hold on to, like something you felt like something touched you through the tent. But like he said, I was halfway asleep. I didn't think much of it while it was happening. Just maybe getting nudged, or I would think something of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ray's a big guy too, Gwen.
He is.
Danger is different to somebody that's almost the size of a Sasquatch.
True story.
But it started raining, and not torrential rain, just enough. And I figured, you know what, nothing's going to bother us now. About 5:30, 6 a.m., the rain stopped. I got to rewind just a little bit there. At one point, there was this really brilliant flash of light. There was no thunder or anything. We couldn't explain it. And I had thought maybe one of the flashes had gone off on the game camera that were in the campsite.
Ooh.
And so it gets early in the morning. We're still freaked out. We throw everything back into a Rubbermaid tote, and we haul it out of there. We probably made that mile and a half in 6 minutes. It wasn't bad for some husky guys. And we were on our way home. And it had bothered me so bad that I almost gave up the research. That was in 2012. So you know that didn't do the job. I'm still here doing it today. But what bothered me the most about it is I'm a researcher. There's always been a healthy bit of skepticism between what I did and talking to people and reconciling whether this is a real animal or not. And that messed me up because I now had an experience with something that I had always had a little bit of doubt with everybody I had ever interviewed about this. Witness, personality, author, always had just a little doubt. And now I've experienced it, and it shook my world because I didn't know what to make of it.
Absolutely.
And that was, you know, our Sasquatch experience, Bigfoot story, whatever you want to call it, but it was intense.
So three encounters essentially in one night.
Yeah, close encounters. One night.
Oh my goodness. This is what I was hoping we would get to hear.
Absolutely.
On this show is this level of, now wait a minute.
Sean, Ben is very much our resident skeptic.
Yes, this is my job.
Well, that's great.
He's very much the skeptic.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Ben, we, over the years, have given people the perfect hoaxer's guide to fabricate their own Bigfoot story and mess with people. And you really have to have that, I don't know, that gut feeling about what's real and what's not. But I'll tell you, since I had this experience, I have had a lot more success being able to tell the difference between who's telling the truth and who's embellishing. Because there's a connection you have with somebody.
Yes.
That you just know.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben, to this day, we don't know what we saw. We think this is what we saw, but we don't know. Because we can't go to the zoo and see it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is my view as well, is that, you know, there is something possibly, but we just might not yet have gotten that final piece of proof, that concrete element that says, hey, this thing exists. I'm not about to say it doesn't for sure, or does for sure, until we see that proof.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's not like you can go to the zoo.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't think any zoo anywhere in the world would be able to contain it should we be able to trap one or catch one. I don't think there's anything that would be able to contain with the strength that these things have.
If you talk about the intelligence of this,
right?
I still think it's an animal, whatever we want to call it, being, entity. There's an intelligence that it has that it's able to avoid us for the most part. I think sightings happen accidentally, that they're observed when they let their guard down or when they're trying to be sneaky and interact with us.
Right. Be curiosity from their part about what we are and what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because when they're sighted, they don't stick around.
No.
They know enough to be afraid of
to
being
get out
exposed.
Of the air. Yeah.
See that? Oh, think about it, Ben. They've watched us enough to know that anytime we see something, you stick around long enough, we end up shooting it.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. I'm sure, you know, they've been firsthand accounts to people shooting deer and bear and squirrels and whatever else is in the woods. So they see us and they probably automatically go to the bad place where, you know, you see a human, automatically they have a gun and automatically they're there to do harm.
Well,
so why not stay away from us?
I was going to say, could you blame them?
No, not at all. I'd like to avoid some humans too, but not everybody's, you know, a good person. But that being said, the first time I met Sean was out at Salt Fork, Ohio, and he graciously listened to my story. And I think we spent an hour in the aisle, and I thought, wow, this guy who's met me like 5 minutes ago is listening to me very intently. And it's been a pleasure knowing you over the last few years and being able to hang out with you and learn from you.
Well, the pleasure's mine. And hopefully you don't learn too much, because I don't think I'm necessarily doing the right thing.
No, but is there a right or a wrong thing, really?
Well, we don't know.
Right, right.
Cumulatively, through all our experiences, we come up with something. And there's people with varying degrees. And, you know, I guess everybody's opinion really does matter in this research, because none of us have gotten the evidence that we need.
Nope.
You know, the power of many is better than the power of one. And that's why I listen to folks like you.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out there that don't put a lot of stock in witness testimony. I like people. I think it's a way for us to connect. It's a way for us to understand, maybe get a little bit more insight into what you were doing when the encounter happened, what the creature was doing when the encounter happened. Like, there's so much that can be taken from those little observations. And we have to start treating witnesses like people, not like data points.
Mm.
And there's a human factor there. And we're learning so much more about trauma every day and how it affects people differently and how people hold on to trauma and process You may remember something from an encounter you had 20 years ago today just by smelling something different or seeing something that sparks it. Like, there's so much about the brain and the human psyche that is really important to study if we really want to start getting closer to the answers of what Bigfoot is.
I couldn't agree more.
Pardon that background sound.
Oh, we got plenty of that here, too.
Yeah.
Like somebody kidnapped a Yeti.
Well, Sean, I would just ask, what do you think was your biggest takeaway from the encounters that evening? If you could sum it up in like
how a insignificant we are? Well, I really feel, I felt small and vulnerable in a place I had been many times. And I never felt like I wasn't top of the proverbial food chain before that night. Like I said, I didn't feel it was imminent danger. I just felt it was dangerous. And there was some very heavy curiosity there. But with so many unknowns, we didn't know which way it was going to go.
Right.
Initially, we couldn't rule out it was somebody messing with us either.
Yeah.
True story.
People scare me more than Sasquatch.
True story.
And on that note.
Sean, I want to thank you for coming on with us today. It was an absolute pleasure. Ben, do you have any last words?
No, I think Sean wrapped it up pretty well there.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Sean, for sharing your experience with us today. Next month, we have... And Sean knows this person, too. We have Jeff Anderson.
Jeff Anderson. Okay.
Jeff Anderson is going to be with us to share a pretty crazy tale with us that he had happened to him.
I cannot wait.
It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be very fun.
Very fun.
Bigfoot, the podcast. Listen wherever podcasts are available and at gotknockers.org.